Hello, and welcome to Hanks for the Memories. You've got a friend in us. This is episode 40, The Great Buck Howard from 2008. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, all I can do is apologize. Not that this is bad. Tom Hanks is like fourth or fifth billed in this movie. And I was like, oh, he's probably in, like, he's not the star, but he's probably in some. I thought for a moment that this was a movie he directed. Neither of those are true. He's in two scenes. I mean, I think it makes sense that he's fourth or fifth billed because, like, there's not that many people you put above him, but he's barely in this movie. I think this is going to be a radically short episode.
He could have played Buck Howard. That would have been interesting. But look, you got him, you got Colin, you got Malkovich, you got Ricky Jay, and you got Emily Blunt, and brief appearance by Sirius. Actor turned comedic actor turned serious actor once again, Adam Scott. So, like, there's not a lot of people here in the first place. So, like, yeah, I want, you know, fourth on the call sheet.
At least if we have to do a movie that he's not really in, and nobody, we don't have to, nobody's making us, but if we're going to do a movie that he's not really in, doing one that stars his son, where he plays father to his son, it makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, that is the deciding denominator right there. You know, if he wasn't, I feel like if he wasn't playing father and son in this movie, there's really, it could have just been like a clip show kind of situation or something. But I think that extra thing, like, you know, gives, it's a little valid, you know, and thankfully it's not the worst movie. It's just like incredibly indie for a certain time that it was made. But it's like kind of an interesting story, and Colin's fine in it. I like him in it.
And before we get to the plot summary and our favorite and least favorite moments, I was saying to you, I don't know why I saw this movie before, because I think I watched it on a plane, but maybe not. Maybe I rented it from the library, because there was a stretch during college and after college where, like, I was still living in my parents' house, their library, their local library, you could rent like 5 or 10 DVDs at a time. And so I would just go there and just rent as many as I could and then watch them all over like 4 or 5 days and bring them back, right? And just do another one. So it might have been that. I don't know. I never before the podcast went on a Tom Hanks kick. I don't think I went on a John Malkovich kick. I don't think I knew who Emily Blunt was back then. It's not like I went on a magic kick. Like, I don't know why. Like, nobody talks about this movie. Nobody that I follow on Letterboxd has seen this movie. It's not a very popular movie. I don't know why I've seen it, but now I've seen it twice.
That's amazing to me. I can't believe it. So, like, this was 2008, and I remember there sort of being like a magic movie sort of run during that time, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, this is after The Prestige and everything like that, but there was like a Steve Carell magic movie, I feel like, came out around that time. It was more of like a comedy. I never heard of this movie before. Once I knew Malkovich was in it, I thought it was the movie where he impersonates Stanley Kubrick, but I don't even think that's a Malkovich movie. I think I'm getting all kinds of wires crossed here. So, Joey, like, no problem never remembering, you know, when or where you saw this. Like, I'm getting this confused with multiple movies without even having seen it. It wasn't off to a good start.
For everybody who's out there who doesn't know what this movie's about, because, like we said, nobody really knows about this movie, please give a quick plot summary of what The Great Buck Howard is about.
Absolutely. So, Tom Hanks plays Mr. Gable, Colin Hanks' dad, and Colin Hanks plays Troy, and he is a law school dropout who starts traveling the country as the personal assistant to the great Buck Howard, played by John Malkovich. He's a mentalist slash magician. He's sort of this throwback to another era. He's been on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson over 60 times.
61 times, he keeps saying it.
61 times. So, like, he's from a whole different generation, and he's definitely been sort of left behind, but he keeps on plugging. And thanks to Troy, played by Colin Hanks, they get, like, a bit of a following. There's an incident where Buck gets his final 15 minutes of fame, and he becomes hot and hip again, and that lands him a show in Vegas. And then Troy leaves his company and goes out on his own and becomes a successful writer thanks to the Emily Blunt character, whom he befriended earlier in the film. And then it ends with Troy finding Buck out on the road again on his own, doing it all over again, and he says that's what he really loves about it. And Troy goes to the final show and, you know, may have just finally witnessed a little bit of actual magic along the way. He makes a deal with Hanks, his dad, that he'll give it a shot, and if he doesn't get a job soon, that he will go indeed back to law school and be what his father wants. But Hanks gives him his blessing to go on his way.
The least believable part about this movie is that in the movie, Colin Hanks just wants to be all different things. He's like, I don't know what I want to be, but his dad always wanted him to be a lawyer. And at one point, he was like, I even wanted to be an astronaut. I'm like, there's no way Tom Hanks, the Tom Hanks we know, would say no to having another astronaut. Like, this man loves music, and he loves space. And those are the two things he loves above all else. And if his son wanted to be an astronaut, I feel like, by all means, son, be an astronaut. But no, it has to be a lawyer. So, like, right off the bat, I'm like, this is not a believable movie.
No, not really. I'm trying to even figure out when this movie takes place. Is it 2008 in the movie, even?
I imagine so.
Okay, it was hard to tell. I wasn't sure if, like, it took place in the 90s, if this guy was, like, supposed to still be relevant and all this, because they mention Entertainment Weekly a lot. They show Access Hollywood, the show or stuff, and I don't even know if are those things still around? I don't know.
They show Conan, they show The Daily Show, they show Regis and Kelly, they definitely date it to a certain period, right?
That's what's so weird about it, is it already felt like a period piece to me, like, and it's only like 12 years ago.
Well, because none of those shows are on anymore, right? Like, yeah. All those shows that he, like, does the circuit of, like, Jay Leno doesn't have a show, that Conan show doesn't exist, Jon Stewart's left The Daily Show, it's Michael and Kelly now, or maybe somebody different now, like, Regis is gone. All these people that he does the grand media tour, which that might have been one of my favorite things, that they had the connections, whether it's, like, the production studio, or just the Hanks connection, or something.
They had the Gary Coleman connection locked down. I mean, he made a quick role of the George Takei cameo.
I do wonder if, like, the George Takei was like, because the whole thing, like, he keeps saying, like, I'm friends with George Takei, I'm friends with Sulu, like, all the, like, whatever. And I wonder if he was always the first pick, or if they're like, I'm friends with Christopher Walken, I'm friends with whoever. And they're like, nah, he's not gonna do this movie. It's like, all right, well, like, who will, we got Takei. It's like, okay, cool, I got Takei. Just like, you know, it's cool, but, like, there's no purpose to it being him. It could be literally any celebrity.
Yeah, I actually think my favorite part is how Buck Howard is, like, so out of the loop as far as, like, who's a celebrity these days. Like, maybe part of it is that he's, like, got his head up his ass so far half the time. He constantly mispronounces names of, like, new celebrities, or, like, doesn't understand, like, why Jerry Springer was famous.
I didn't know he was the mayor of Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that being, like, a big thing when his show first came on the air. I totally forgot that, but when they mentioned it, it was sort of like, oh, that's
crazy.
Right. That's right. Yeah, very crazy. And I was thinking, they mentioned Keanu, they mentioned Cincinnati. I mean, I was getting Christmas flashbacks. I don't know about
C-I-N-C-I-N-N-A-T-I, Cincinnati. Hello, Montez. I don't think she listens to this, but hello, Montez. So is that your favorite part, or what is your favorite part of this movie?
I don't think I have, like, a real favorite part. Probably when Emily Blunt shows up.
Yeah, that's mine too, because she's just the best.
I missed her credit.
She's the best.
Yeah, and, like, that was a total surprise. I missed her credit in the opening. I didn't know she was going to be in this, and I was like, oh, look at this. Like, I bet, like, did father and son both get to kiss this same actress? Like, that was a little weird, but once I got over that instinct, I was like, yeah, like, I'm so glad she showed up. She had just, like, extra energy to the whole thing. I kind of loved the idea of this mentalist, you know? It's like, I wish this wasn't the movie he was in, this character, but I wish we could almost see this character in his prime, because I love the whole concept of him, and this kind of character's been around forever. Like, before movies, they would go to, like, the mentalist and see the shows and all that at Penny Arcade or at Vaudeville Acts and all that kind of stuff. So, like, that was interesting too, just the whole idea that we're going to follow a mentalist. It seems super antiquated in these modern days and stuff. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I guess, like, the closest thing to this might be, like, Man on the Moon, where Jim Carrey plays Andy Kaufman. That's not even the same thing. Like, it's close, but it's not. It's the same type of thing, like a dated thing that is still trying to hold on.
It's weird. Like, I went, and I think they have, like, a dedication at the end to
the amazing Kreskin, right? The guy that this is based on, yeah.
Kreskin. I only knew of him because the movie Ed Wood, which is one of my favorite movies, and there's a character in there called Criswell, which is also based off of Kreskin. So, like, there's sort of, like, I don't know, it's sort of like a thing that's popped up every once in a while that's very sort of rare and stuff, but they all seem to be based off of the same guy. You know? Like, if you look at Jeffrey Jones and Ed Wood, he's basically playing Buck Howard.
Okay. All right. I like that. I haven't seen Ed Wood since I saw it the first time. That's one I definitely need to see again. I remember really, really liking it. If I have to pick another one, if it's not my favorite, again, I don't love him as an actor, but I love him. Maybe I do. I don't know. I feel like I don't think that I love Steve Zahn, but, like, he's very good in this. And, like, going back to That Thing You Do, like, this is another Playtone picture, right? You get the title card at the top of the movie and getting Steve Zahn back from that. Like, I like him in this. He's kind of got that, like, spunky kind of, like, Midwest charm, kind of.
I always feel like he's not in enough at all, but when he shows up, he's a complete scene stealer. Like, he's got that amazing mustache. He rarely plays someone this stupid. Like, he's great at playing idiots and things. Like, he did that one Nature movie. Have you seen that one with, I think, Jonah Hill and Justin Long or something? And that's pretty hilarious. And I just loved him in general and stuff. So, yeah, it's just what's interesting, not interesting, but what's kind of weird about his character is, like, he's in and out of the movie so quick. It feels like a guy who's going to stick around for the rest of the film. Same with Adam Scott, right? Like, I'm like, oh, these guys are going to be in the movie from now on, but they only kind of get a sequence or two to shine, and then they bow out for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I think that's maybe my least favorite part, but it's not by the movie's fault. Like, the movie wants to tell a story kind of about two people, right? It's about Buck Howard and Colin Hanks. Or, like, it's sort of Buck Howard through the eyes of Colin Hanks, right? Like, it's not even two full people. It's kind of like one and a half, almost. And we get a little bit of input from Emily Blunt, more so than anybody else. We get a little bit of Tom Hanks. We get a little bit of Steve Zahn. We get a little bit of Adam Scott. We get a little bit of his, like, new assistant at the end, right? His road manager at the end. But the movie is very set on telling a story about one man through the eyes of another man who's unfamiliar with him. So, like, we're entering the same point. Like, we don't know him. We know about mentalism, but we don't know the history there. And it's just kind of disappointing that for a movie that's about Buck Howard, I feel like we don't learn anything about Buck Howard.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, too. Like, Colin Hanks' character should have been called Buck Howard. Like, it's his movie. Like, he's the guy we're learning about. He's the one we see sort of, like, you know, not that there's much growth and change or whatever, but, like, I kind of like his story. It's very simplistic, but you're right. We're learning about Buck through his eyes, and if there, one thing's for sure, like, he's a completely reliable narrator, so, like, I believe what I'm seeing in regards to Buck Howard. I just wish that we did get scenes of Malkovich on his own, or Malkovich, like, having more of sort of, like, a tantrum or something else, like, more focus probably on the Malkovich character without the lens of the Colin Hanks character.
Because, like, this movie is essentially about a guy having, like, a midlife or a quarter-life crisis. Not a midlife crisis, like a quarter-life crisis, because he's, like, he has this existential crisis in the middle of the movie, and, like, that kind of turns Emily Blunt on, and, like, which is kind of weird, but, like, it's just about him. It almost feels like that kind of college post-grad where it's, like, I don't know what to make of the world, but putting that story in a movie about a magician is, like, wait, what? Considering, like, the title of the movie is The Magician, and, like, they have the closing title card that's about, like, you know, this guy is based on a real thing, and whatever, just, like...
You know what it reminded me of? You ever seen, is it My Week with Marilyn? Have you ever seen that one?
I know about it. I haven't seen it.
So I remember seeing that in theaters at the time, and going out of there being like, I didn't love it because, like, there's no Marilyn. She's there, but it's mostly, like, the other guy we're seeing on the set and interacting with Marilyn from time to time, and, like, but we're following him back to his house and learning about his friends and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's kind of like just a movie that we're going to get to before too long in this podcast, like A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. It's like, it's the Mr. Rogers movie. It's like, not really. It's about a journalist who hates his dad, who, like, comes to terms with it because of Mr. Rogers. Like, Mr. Rogers is in, like, a quarter of that movie. It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange. I mean, for my money, I mean, obviously the better Colin Hanks movie, if you want to get acquainted with him, is probably Orange County. That's a really fun movie. He's really good in that. That's also got Jack Black. But, and he's kind of playing the same character, where it's like, he kind of knows what he wants, but he's playing, like, the same kind of guy where it just seems like, well, I want to try everything kind of guy. And I think he plays that pretty well. Like, he's very affable. I like Colin Hanks as a presence. He almost reminds me of young Tom Hanks when they share the screen. This is the movie I definitely see the resemblance when they're sharing the screen.
Oh yeah,
it just sort of, like, lacked some kind of punch. Like, it feels like this was released on HBO instead of the theater.
I know it had a DVD release because I saw it somehow, you know, 10 years ago. I don't know.
It also feels like one of those movies someone, one of our teachers would assign to, because, like, the school just had it. It's like, oh yeah, watch that movie as, like, a...
I think the story of Colin Hanks, and I didn't do any real research into him before we did the podcast. Maybe I could have or should have, or who knows. But I think his story is very, very interesting because obviously you grow up in the shadow of America's dad, right? Like, your dad is America's dad. And it's like you follow in his footsteps into his career. But I think what he's done, which is really interesting, is that he's become kind of like a multi-hyphenate sort of. Like, he was just on a podcast I listened to called This Particular Album is Very, Very Important to Me. That show, the two hosts have a guest on every time who brings on an album that they really love, kind of like from their formative years, like some album that really means a lot to them. And so he went on there to talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar, Sex Magik.
Oh, great.
His number one thing in the world, it seems, is music. And he's, like, so passionate and so knowledgeable about music. And, like, if you watch the This Too Shall Pass, like the Rise and Fall of Tower Records, like that documentary that he made, like, yeah, his heart is in music, I think. And, like, I think he's a good actor. And I think he's charming. And especially if you want, like, a young Tom Hanks type, like, it's quite literally Colin Hanks, right? But he's done this interesting thing in a career where he's doing this and he's good in these things, but he's also like, for better or worse, I can't compete with my dad. I don't want to compete with my dad. So, like, I'm gonna do this other thing. And he's great. Like, I think he's in, like, the kind of in the alt comedy scene in LA. Like, he's in that world, and, like, he's just a fascinating guy.
Yeah, like he showed up on Comedy Bang Bang a few times. Yeah, absolutely. And like, I kind of like that. I love that he didn't feel obligated to sort of bombard us with his lineage or anything. You know, he seems like he's been flying under the radar, like intentionally, almost in like that kind of Nick Coppola way, right? Where, I mean, Cage exploded, of course, he became a megastar, but like in the same way where he's like, yes, I'm Tom Hanks' son, but like, I want to make it on my own merit kind of thing. Like, I wasn't even aware 100% back in the day that this was like Hanks' son. I was like, well, he looks a lot like him, but I'm still not like sold on it. So like, I've never really got the sense that, you know, he was trying to like eclipse his father or that he was living in a shadow of any kind like that. So he seems like incredibly super well adjusted for being the son of Tom Hanks. But I also got to think, like, even related to the music, like with Chet and everything in the family too, that makes a lot of sense, right? I wonder if he produced any of Chet's beats or if he like, you know, worked on his albums or if they just growing up as brothers together had like a band or something. Like, I'm dying to hear some of those basement tapes.
Yeah, him and Chet, you mean? Like, it'd be...
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The Hanks Bros band? Look at that.
Well, now that we know that Rita raps, because Rita rapped in some coronavirus. Remember, she did, like, the whatever...
The Naughty by Nature thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I don't know if I have anything else. Let me just see if there's any trivia about this. Just...
I guess we went over the things we disliked the most, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, there's nothing I truly hated about this movie either.
No, it's fine.
Maybe the idea that it's so non-offensive is kind of offensive. Like, it just really doesn't sort of try to shoot for the moon. It's just sort of like, yeah, we know we're getting this out, it's going to be made, and like everyone's good in it, but there's nothing like super special going on.
The comments on Letterboxd, like the people who log this, are so mean to it. They're like, when you wonder if you should even log a movie because it's so insignificant, it's like, fuck right off. Like,
no,
who are you?
That's not this movie anyway. That's nowhere near this movie.
No, and I do think it's true of this movie, but like every time you see a movie or listen to an album or hear a song or watch a show, like that's someone's favorite whatever. And like there's someone out there who loves this movie. Like I think if you come across this, you could do a lot worse. I don't know that you need to see this movie, but I think it's totally fine. I think everybody's charming in it. Everybody's pleasant in it. Nothing really happens. I also think that there's far more egregious, well-off white man struggles with like career choices. Like there's way worse versions of that.
Oh, like Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I went to right away. I was like, at least this isn't like a snobby in your face, like elitist kind of, you know, diatribe or anything.
You know, this guy's making like $600 a week just like being a guy's personal assistant, basically. It's like, that's not glamorous. He's never home. He's on the road all the time. He's in kind of a relationship with Emily Blunt, but she's got a boyfriend. So like, who knows? It's not a great look.
You know what the weirdest thing about this is, I mean, it is, you know, kind of based on a person, but it's not like based on an event in that person's life. You know, like it felt weird that we weren't watching like based on a true story. Like it's like based on someone's career, sure, you know, it's like an homage to someone's career, but it's like an entirely fabricated telling, you know? So like, maybe it would have been more interesting if it was an actual biopic or something, you know what I'm saying? Whereas like, that way there'd just be a little more credence to what's happening, even if nothing particularly interesting or exciting is going on. At least you could be like, well, like, you know, he actually like went through that, like that was a real event kind of thing. I don't know, I think that kind of tanked it a little bit for me.
And we talked about this on a recent episode sometime, I think. It all blends together. I don't know. But we were talking about biopics, right? Oh, it was American Made, which I don't know if it's out yet or not, because we did Cruise out of order. Oh, it comes out today. It's also out today. Perfect timing. And we were talking about how, like, movies that span a person's life aren't necessarily as effective as one spanning a specific time. And I think, like, what you're saying, like, if they had spent more time on the time that he couldn't get his money back, like, because he's got this trick, right, where he's like, I can always know, and whether it's a wire or whether he actually has intuition or, as you did in your plot summary, a little bit of magic, like, he always knows where to find the money. Maybe they do, like, the build up to that, because I don't, like, what's the time span this movie takes place over? 3 months? 6 months? A year?
Yeah, like, a couple weeks, I figured.
I have no idea.
Right, yeah. He seems to sort of, like, fall into a little bit of extra help when he gets to the hospital and there's like a whole news story on him, and it like accelerates the timeline very much. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I would have also loved to have seen like, do Buck Howard's knowing it's going to be his last appearance on the Tonight Show, like what do you do next kind of, and like have it take place like what in the 70s or 80s or something. Like that's sort of the more thing that I was sort of leaning toward, like if it's going to be about Buck, like let's see him sort of in his prime.
Because there's also a movie to be told about a magician trying, or a mentalist trying to recapture his former glory, but like don't frame the story about his new assistant trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing in the world.
There's two Tom Hanks scenes in this movie. There's just two conversations between him and Colin. Neither are particularly noteworthy. The top trivia on IMDb is that he and Colin play father-son in this movie. It's like, cool, yeah, we know that. The Vegas scene was filmed in Hollywood on the same set that was used for the Palace Hotel ballroom scene in The Blues Brothers, so there's a little bit of movie history there. Sunshine Cleaning, which also starred Emily Blunt and Steve Zahn, also came out this same year, so that's basically all the trivia about this movie. Nothing really exciting.
All I really have left to say is that the scenes between Hanks and Hanks, it feels, those are the realest parts. It feels like... Yeah. What Hanks says to his sons, where it's like, you know, you need a backup, you got to do this if you want to do that, like, you got, you know, it seemed like we were watching like a behind the scenes, like heart to heart, like that came across incredibly real.
We can skip the Tom Cruise one for a second. The question, does Tom Hanks play America's dad in this movie? I would say yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
He just wants the best for his son.
And not only that, though, it's like he can compromise with his son, right? Like he can understand like, oh, what's best for me is not best for him. And just because
I want... And not in the Cage sense. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But also just in the sense of like he learns not to control his son's life, right? His son has to make his own mistakes, this and that, all the other things. And by the end, he's like, all right, you go off and like you give it a try.
So now the question we skipped, do you think Tom Cruise could have played Colin Hanks's dad in his movie? Or if not, what role could he have played?
So it would have been funny to see him like, you know, with a like a little bald with the glasses, maybe the Les Grossman look. Like that's a very sort of dad image right there. Really.
Yeah.
I don't know. You would have to definitely stand on an apple box or two. Colin looks pretty tall. I honestly don't know. But I think he could have been in here somewhere. Or he could have been in here as Tom Cruise. There's so many celebrity cameos. It would have been hilarious if he was just like bumped into Tom Cruise at like Spago or something like that.
A scene that I really like is when Tom Arnold is on Leno and he bumps Buck Howard, but he like in the back hallway is just like, hey man, like you signed this movie back in the 70s. Like you mean so much, but you have no idea. That's a thing you could say he plays himself. Like just swap out Tom Arnold for Tom Cruise. Just the same name. Totally different career. One married to Roseanne, one not married to Roseanne. But, you know, that works. That's easy swap.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Cool. Okay, so now the Tom Hanks Awards, the best and the worst, the Woodies, best film, worst film, no.
No.
Best of the worst, most. I wonder, okay, knowing the categories, is there anything that we should nominate this for?
Probably not.
Best or worst Hanks role, most wasted Hanks performance? Again, no. Like, he serves the story. It's not like we're like, oh, we need more of this character.
Exactly.
Best ensemble, no. Fight, dance scene, party scene, outfit, wardrobe, death, line, freak out, soundtrack, love story. Best non-Hanks actor, male or female. I think Emily Blunt's good. I think Colin Hanks is good.
I mean, even Malkovich, he's good, but like no one's really... Malkovich is good, but he's not like amazing, right? Like he's not at the top of his game, it seems.
Right. It's not being John Malkovich. It's not... What was that Keanu movie where he... Is that The Dangerous Liaisons?
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not Rounders. Like, there's so many better Malkovich things to see. Not that he's, again, not that he's bad. He's good. It's just, if you want to see Malkovich, see something else. So, no nominations, which, again, at least I will say that in 10 years when I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw Great Buck Howard twice, at least this time I'll know why I watched it. So, Mike, like I mentioned today on the network, on Fridays Are For Fun, the Tom Tom Club, we have American Made coming out because we are doing both Tom podcasts every Friday. So American Made, one of your favorite Tom Cruise movies, came out today. Next week on this very fine feed, Mike, I don't have the needle drop. I'm going to have to send this to you to put it in post, but...
Do you want me to just do it?
Yeah, please.
Get ready for an adventure.
It's pretty close.
I don't think I could ever replicate that line read perfectly. You could just send me the clip.
Get ready for an adventure.
Get ready for an adventure.
It's sing-songy in a way that's not sing-songy. I don't understand how to...
It was a total fluke. I was trying to do a terrible line reading and somehow actually succeeded. Get ready for an adventure.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But next week on this very feed, Angels and Demons, the second Dan Brown, Robert Langdon adaptation, John Brooks, Jess Collins, Montez, both back to talk about Angels and Demons, the first book in the series, but the second movie in the series. And then on, oh boy, on Cruise Club next week, big one, Mission Impossible Fallout. Spoiler, my favorite Tom Cruise movie. Next Friday on Cruise Club.
Get ready for an adventure.
Yes, please. Actually, so here, I asked you when we did the American Made episode, you did not have an answer. Today is Friday, June 5th. 2 days ago, a third time's a charm came out. What is that episode? Do you know now?
Yes, I do. That episode is Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Cool.
I'm joined by my unofficial co-host, Brian High School Slumber Party, and a guest we've had on here, and he was just on for Polar Express. Dan Hayden joins me for the first time over there as my sort of action movie expert.
Very cool. So I've never seen any of those movies. Do I need to see all three? Like, I've heard that, I know the first two were good. Is the third one good?
Try and take everything into account, what we said earlier about trashing movies, and, you know, I really don't like to do it, but the third one is not very good at all, which was a disappointment, especially considering the first two kick major ass.
So I should see the first two, but not necessarily the third one.
Yeah, only see the third one if you really need to like, listen to our episode or something, if you're, like, a completionist, which I know you kind of are, so you're going
to
watch it anyway.
No, I used to be, and then I was like, we started putting out too many podcasts. Like, I got through, like, six movies on Hoffman. I'm like, I can't do this, guys. I'm so sorry. And like, they're like, why would you even try? Like, it's basically like, what are you doing? So
tune in, listen to that episode. We're not mean, but we get on that.
You're honest.
We're honest, and we get on that movie's case a little bit, but it's all in good fun.
Well, also today there is a new speaking of High School Slumber Party, there is a new High School Slumber Party today. There is a new episode of Too Fast, Too Forever, which Friday, June 5th will be Ronin, the Robert De Niro movie, which is not necessarily a car movie from what I understand, because I've never seen it, but there's a car chase that's apparently one of the all-time greats. Let me see if I can look on the calendar. Let's see if we can give a four-episode plug. So we got this episode, we've got American Made, we've got Ronin, and I think it might be a Kate Hudson movie on High School Summer Party. It might be Twilight Eclipse if things stay true. So very, very exciting. But for all things Hanks for the Memories and all 27 shows on the network, you go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. Check out Cruise Club and Hanks for the Memories every Friday now. We've got a handful more of Cruise Club episodes. We got another 25 or so of this before we go away. So plenty more Hanks for the Memories. Just, you know, plenty to listen to. I hope you're staying safe and socially distanced, and, you know, we're reopening, and I hope you're safe. That's all I gotta say. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manson.
And we'll see you next time right here on Hanks for the Memories.
I think you've done that.